Connacht was probably one of the easier times that I had, to be honest with you. Thoroughly enjoyed it. But as we've just seen with Graham, it's a tenuous position, and just like that, you can be gone.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Right, you're very welcome along to this week's episode of Who You Got. Kathleen is here. Kathleen, how are you?
I'm good.
Shane is here. Shane, how are you?
All good, thank you.
Do we want to look at the league table? I don't think we don't need. No, is there any need for us to look at this? This is last week's results. Shane at the bottom there. Kathleen at the bottom there. Me at the bottom there. Last week didn't really exist, did it? No. I think we were busy experiencing life. Will had a reasonable week with 5 points. Nathan is currently joint top with Will as a result of what happened last week. Owen's in third. I'm still in fourth, but like last week alone is the difference between me and Will. Phil's still at the bottom. He's not here to defend himself. Colm also close to the bottom. Kathleen, you are the low-ranking member of the team today.
I know. I don't like this. It's a very different experience than I'm used to. I mean, last season, it was Phil top, Colm second, me third for most of the year, and then I won the Euro. So I don't know. I feel like I've lost my magic sparkle this year.
There's nothing worse in gambling than after-timers who are like, oh, I'm sharing my winning bet slip, which is basically, that's your version of what you've just done there.
So. Kathleen got some free points last year, you remember. Not that we want to bring up.
Well,
that up
again. Which wouldn't have made a difference at the end of the year. I could have not had those free points.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. I still would have came in the same place.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up again, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, we grandfathered people in. They had to be given some kind of score as opposed to...
I mean, I was doing the minor thing of, you know, covering a World Cup. It wasn't...
True. Like, you had
put in some work.
Yeah, it's fair.
I would like to also start the show with a complaint this week that our main fixture seems to be Manchester United versus Chelsea, which is like clearly not the fixture of the weekend. The standard fixture of the game is Spurs against Villa, which are two higher ranked, better teams than Spurs and than United and Chelsea. Maybe I suppose Chelsea are quite a reasonable.
Do you want to start
story.
With that then? Do you want to start with Spurs?
No,
make you feel better?
No, because it's just the way it works. We've got a Man United bias on the team. Cut this business and it bleeds Man United.
Well, they do have a new manager now, so.
Here are the score predictions. I was going to say United are friendless, but they're not. Phil, Shane and Will all think Manchester United are going to have the new manager bounce. It's Manchester United against Chelsea. Colm and Owen have both gone for 2-2 draws. I've gone for a Chelsea win. John has gone for a Chelsea win. Kathy's gone for a Chelsea win. The cracker, 3-2. And Mick is also going for a 1-1 draw. I actually did think about the 1-1 draw and then I thought, oh no, Man United aren't that good.
This is the usual, this is the result I was going to go for. So you cover two bases.
But you don't, because you don't get any points and nobody remembers anything.
True,
it's like...
Yeah. Like the new manager bounce, it's obviously going to be the Van Nistelrooy bounce on Sunday, but you could sense a difference in the body language straight away, and it might have only been one game, but that Leicester match in the Carabao Cup, Van Nistelrooy hugging the players coming off, there seemed to be more smiles, even for lads who... Would have liked Erik ten Hag. Like Lisandro Martinez was coming off, and he played under ten Hag at Ajax, of course. And there was a lot of hugs with Van Nistelrooy and smiles. I'm just expecting a bounce, especially at Old Trafford. They have a few games in a row at home,
so they get two new manager bounces.
Exactly.
They're now the best run club in the world.
Yeah. One this weekend, another one on November 11th. Whenever Amorim comes in.
Yeah. That's his first game. there's a bit more excitement from United fans just because there's a style of play with Ruben Amorim. Not many of us will have watched too much Portuguese league football over the last couple of years, but Amorim is very, very stuck to his style. It seems to have changed a little bit over the last year. So, some players will miss out on this. I know Colm touched on this in the show during the week, but where you shoehorn some of those players in, it's hard to know.
But you don't. You just get them out.
Yeah. Rashford would be the start of it for me. I'd offload him pretty much straight away. For a player who has had attitude problems under successive managers.
Well, he did score a boatload of goals for Ten Hag in his first season.
Yeah.
When they played him in a better position than they subsequently changed his game. So somebody was during the week was talking about his heat map. In that first season versus heat map. And you're like, maybe stick him in the good heat map.
And he still has a brilliant game every what?
I've literally talked you out of this now, haven't I?
No.
You just changed your mind.
A brilliant game.
Okay, yeah, fair point.
A brilliant game every now and again isn't good enough, you know, at a formerly top club at Manchester United. I just feel like the talk was that Amorim's talks with Liverpool that time maybe faltered a little bit because he was so glued to his style of play. But that's something United fans have been calling out for, because Ten Hag seemed to be suggesting he had this style of play. The 4-2-3-1 was the formation, but we don't really know what his stamp was on the team. And I still don't, to this day, don't know what it was. And also in press conferences and interviews, it's only a small thing, but didn't inspire confidence.
So let me just tease that out for a second. If Amorim comes in and says, this is my style, and he picks players who are patently unsuited to it, and it doesn't get results, how long do you wait until you go, okay, now it's your team, I can see what you're doing?
Well, he needs a couple of windows, doesn't he? To, like, Ten Hag has bought half the Eredivisie, which, I don't know, some of those players just aren't. Like, Onana's been good. Martinez, I think United fans can get behind. Hoyland will come good. I'm not convinced by Joshua Zirkzee whatsoever so far. I know
Zirkzee's
it's early days.
Sub. Like, he's, yeah, he's a squad member.
And then Anthony, the less said about him, the better.
We should do full shows on Anthony every so often just to remind ourselves of the fallacy.
That he's still there. I like the sound of what Amorim.
But say it's a disaster for the rest of the season, because what he's trying to do is find out which of his players in the current squad are going to be able to play.
It's kind of two seasons that you need, isn't it? Like, if you don't start seeing some sort of wholesale changes after two seasons, then it's only going one way.
Jerry Thornley and Fiona Hayes brought this up on Wednesday Night Rugby. Like, in rugby, generally, it's the third season you get. Like, Leo Cullen had, you have the bedding in period, and then you really come good in rugby. And they seem to give more time in rugby, in fairness, than football. There's a lot less patience in football, certainly in Premier League with the money involved. But he needs that season
or
two.
If he comes in now, he has like one window to do anything he wants. He's probably not going to do all that much. He's still going to get used to the team. Team are going to get used to him. Then he has a summer transfer and a winter transfer window. Again, you're not going to do wholesale changes to a team in that time. He can get them running and working, but if you're looking at proper success and getting Manchester United back to what they used to be, I think two seasons is the minimum you probably need.
When do you need to see a turnaround, though? When does it need to start looking like... Because here's the thing. Say he is a manager of Unai Emery's quality and can immediately have an impact and transform the team's shoddy work ethic and belief into, actually, we have a plan, there's an adult in the room, we know what we're going to... Or Thomas Tuchel's effect at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Likewise, apparently he came in and after one training session had fixed their midfield issues and they went on to win the Champions League. So we have seen really good managers come in with a reasonable squad of players. And I think the squad is reasonable. They're all top quality internationals, largely, who have managed to reach the top of their position and country tree. That's why they're at Man United. When they got to Man United, their application and mental fortitude and football intelligence seems to have dropped off a cliff. So maybe he can fix that. Like, maybe he can.
Yeah.
But what if it's... Like, Klopp's first season was largely a disaster apart from a run in the Europa League. Loads of players got really injured very quickly because of the increased intensity in training. And he burned off the bad characters who he didn't want. And then the next year, I think he finished fourth. And now he had a much better run, I think, in... second year was also Europa League, was it? Anyway, but it took him ages to get to a position. But you could see what he was trying to do. Mm. How long does the Man United fans... Are they so desperate now that actually this season can be a total write-off? But he understands that he's got four players who he can build the team around, and they get three in the transfer window and two more in the... So, you know, quickly enough, you can actually begin to get players who are competent.
Like, he's taken over in mid-November, which means that he will probably get a freebie until May. Like, unless it's an absolute disaster, which I can't foresee.
The 11th is the confirmation today that we're seeing. They've announced that the 11th will be his first day at work.
But like, unless it's a complete disaster, he will get a lot of leeway between now and the end of the season. He'll get his first full season.
I'd almost prefer
next
if
August.
It was a complete disaster and he just burns several of those players out. In a way, if I'm a Man United fan, like, I'm okay, I don't care. Obviously they need European football. They'll have some form of European football, no doubt, next season, but they need it for financial reasons and for contractual reasons.
But then that'll be a success. He's taken over a team in 14th, and if he manages to get Europe for next season, he'll say, well, look, I took them up to 7th or 8th or whatever it might be. Maybe win a trophy. He won a couple of trophies with Sporting, won a League Cup, I think, with Braga as well. So he does like a trophy and a cup run. If United win a trophy this season, regardless of what it is, Carabao or FA Cup, and then get 7th or 8th in the league. That's a brilliant...
It's funny how things change. I remember a couple of years ago being on breakfast with you and talking about Arsenal and winning a cup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a certain
and
trophy.
And the slagging I got.
Yeah, yeah. Was it the Carabao? It was the Carabao. And then life smacked me in the face. And I think any United fan, then they win the Carabao Cup and beat Newcastle the following year, the FA Cup. I don't think the decision to keep Ten Hag after the FA Cup was a bad one. I actually agreed with it at the time. Look, hindsight is 20/20, and it's led to, what, 7 or 8 million quid extra in compensation? Probably would have been 10. It ends up being 17, and Ten Hag goes off into the wilderness. But I still think that they made the right call to... I think that the feel-good factor and desire among fans was there to offer Ten Hag an extension based off beating City in an FA Cup final. It's come back to bite them, but hindsight's great.
The phrase you're looking for as well. Well, how the turntables.
Exactly.
So tell me, what do you think is actually going to happen in this game? I mean, these are teams at the moment heading in opposite directions, right?
Yeah. It's managing to nullify Cole Palmer, really, isn't it? Do United have the players to do that at the minute? Probably not. As you saw there, I've opted for a 3-1 United victory, I think. There is just that confidence.
That would be remarkable.
Yeah, it would be.
That would be like truly, what?
I know.
This makes no sense.
Yeah.
You wouldn't bring Amor in then. You just
give it Rude to the end of the season. I don't know. I just think, like, the players, something about the body language, and you can't go off body language to pick a result of a football match, but that's exactly what I'm going off.
And like the same body language they had after beating Barnsley 7-0. Is that the same? Is that what you're...
Not quite.
Only we
same.
Have recent evidence that this means nothing.
Yeah, but then they're not even playing for Rude. They're playing for Ruben Amorim, who's watching from Lisbon, you know, this Sunday. And I'd imagine a big reaction. It's a big game at Old Trafford. It's 4:30 kickoff on Sunday. The fans will have a few beers before they go in, and I would expect some sort of a sharp reaction to the Ten Hag sacking. It'll be sickening for Ten Hag watching on as United, if United were to beat Chelsea 3-1 this Sunday. But that's just how I feel. That's just how I feel, Jerry.
Okay, so no evidence, just...
just a feeling in the waters.
Purely on the vibes.
A hunch.
The vibes are back.
Yeah.
In fairness, if you were to pick a game that could be judged on vibes alone, I feel like United-Chelsea would be it. Like, that's why I went for a bit of a 3-2... It just feels like the sort of game where there could be a lot of chaos, a lot of goals. Mm-hmm. And I think Chelsea have the better side, obviously, at the moment. And that's why I went for them to win. But as Cullum said last week, United are the worst team to try and predict this season, because one minute they're up, the next they're down, or they're going lower than we ever expected they could.
The XG has been indicative of a team who have been somewhat unfortunate in many of the games, and so you would expect regression to the mean, and that'll look like improvement. If they were just actually as average as they have been, they'd be much better on in terms of points and goals. So let's try and inject some evidence of where the money is this week. David Kellner joins us. David, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Just listening intently to your conversation about Manchester United and going with gut and feeling rather than actually who's going to be playing for Manchester United this weekend.
Well, let's bring some rationale to the conversation then. Away from the guts, what do you think is likely to happen and what's the money saying?
The money's saying it's very, very even. Manchester United are 8-5, the draw 14-5, Chelsea in the betting at 6-4. Chelsea beat Manchester United 4-3 in a wild game back in April. I can see a similar scenario unfolding here. And I think that I looked at the list earlier of selections, and I believe everyone went for both teams to score in this match. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I can see both teams scoring. I just think Cole Palmer will be the difference maker in this match. We saw that against Newcastle last weekend. This game is a bet builder winnings boost game, and it's qualifies for impact sub with William Hill as well. So if your player that you select goes off and the player that comes on can land that market for you, and I think Cole Palmer will be the difference maker. A bet builder that I quite like in the game is, I just think Chelsea are the better of the two sides by quite a distance. And I know a lot of people reading into what happened midweek, but Chelsea rested all 11 of their starters. Man United went with a pretty much full-strength side when beating Leicester. Chelsea will be strong in this game. I think Palmer will score. I think Chelsea will win. I think both teams will score in the game, as you all do as well. And that's around about 9-2. But yeah, I think Chelsea are just the better of the two sides. It's that simple.
Yeah. And last week we were having the conversation about who was actually going to show up and play for Arsenal. If we'd known Bukayo Saka was going to be starting and playing, then I think maybe we would have been more circumspect in predicting a Liverpool win. It's almost irrespective of who shows up for Man United this weekend, though, right? Like, Chelsea are a superior outfit.
Yeah, exactly. I think Chelsea just have the better players from the goalkeeper forward, really. I don't see as many holes in that Chelsea side. And I think that it's all going to be about whether or not Manchester United can stop Cole Palmer. But we've seen superior teams to Manchester United this season being able to, unable to stop Cole Palmer. And I think that's what we'll see on Sunday afternoon again, in my opinion. And I think it will be quite a feisty encounter. And I do expect some sort of performance from Manchester United, because they're going to look to be trying to impress Ruben Amorim. Amorim does come in, as you say, on the 11th of November, but that's an international fortnight. So his first game, Amorim, will be, I think, on the 24th against Ipswich. So I'll expect immediate returns from that encounter. But I just think Chelsea are the better of the two sides. And I think they're a good price at 6-4 to win away Manchester United this weekend.
Just to put you on the spot here, was Erik ten Hag the overwhelming favourite from the get-go to be the first manager sacked? Was there a bit of a surprise in that market? Or after the most recent previous results, was it kind of evident that he was going to win that race?
Yeah, it's been a weird market, that one, because at the start of the season, he wasn't favourite to be dismissed. But when Manchester United got off to such a rocky start, he went really, really short in the betting. They tend to have an upturn in performance, then he'd drift out in the betting again. Before the weekend, they were beaten by West Ham, who was as big as 3-1 to be next manager to go. Following the West Ham performance and that defeat, that late defeat, he went into 5-6. And then virtually the next morning, he was announced that he was going to be sacked. So I think a lot of punters got involved at the 11-4 just at that time, before the West Ham game, and then obviously went odds on after the West Ham game, and then was dismissed very quickly on the back of that performance.
Yeah, the great thing about that market is it resets immediately, and everybody else is looking around going, who's next?
Yeah, and I think that's what people are looking at now. I mean, I'll just very quickly get the manager odds to be next manager out up in front of me. I think we've got that market available now following Ten Hag's dismissal. Russell Martin is 11-10 favourite to be next Premier League manager to leave. Gary O'Neill's 100-30. Julian Lopetegui is 4-1. Thomas Frank 9-1. Steve Cooper 9-1. Ollie Glasner is 10-1, and it's 14-bar. So Russell Martin, a shade of odds against it, 11-10, but I'm sure that market will develop over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, for sure. Anything else about the United Chelsea game that we need to be aware of?
Nothing on that game, I think. I think it will be a straightforward 3 points for Chelsea personally, but you have that difference of opinion there in the studio, and I saw all your selections, and I don't think many people fancy the draw, and it is one of those games where Manchester United might turn up, but we keep saying that week in, week out, and it doesn't materialise that often. So, yeah, in my opinion, I think Chelsea will win the game and win it convincingly.
All right, Dave, good stuff. Thanks many for joining us. Cheers.
Thank you.
Are you excited about Ruben Amorim? Like, is this were you immediately excited as you've done a bit of reading and kind of, have you, you know, it's that meme of...
Here we go again. When I saw Amorim linked to Liverpool and subsequently West Ham, and he had those talks in London for West Ham,
West Ham reject Ruben Amorim, is
West
that what
you're saying? West Ham reject, yeah, basically. He's one of the most exciting managers in world football. Like, he's 39 years of age. He's taken Lisbon from, you know, depths where they hadn't won a Portuguese league in a long time. Look, you can't compare the Portuguese league to what he's going to do in the Premier League. I know that, but you're always looking to find the next upstart, the 03 Mourinho coming from Porto. He has a...
Next Andre Villas-Boas.
Possibly, yeah. Who knows?
Is that good or bad?
Yeah, well, who knows? Anything is better than what was at Manchester United. But he seems to have the ability to speak. He has...
Just because he's handsome, isn't it? That's what it is.
That earns him
an extra 25%.
I think it earns
points.
Him a few percent, to be honest with you. Yeah. It does earn him a few percent.
Or Ten Hag, the farmer.
It's a bit different. I showed Aoife, my partner at home, the photograph of... I said, oh, this is the new Man United manager. She says, when's the next match? We'll go over. So that does come into it. It's a 3 or 4% thing. He is a handsome bloke, but
the vain Man United players, that's, you
will
know,
lean into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, Bruno Fernandes and Diogo Dalot are going to be absolutely delighted with this, you would think.
Do you think so?
Well, Bruno's a former Sporting player.
Yeah, but not sure he's his type of player, is he?
No, well, he doesn't really... But do you put Bruno out on the right-hand side and then under an Amorim style, you have the wing-backs who attack, and then if you have someone at right wing-back, and maybe that is a Dalot attack, and that allows Bruno maybe to move back into his more natural position behind the striker. I don't know, some players are going to thrive in this. He still likes the two holding midfielders, so Kobbie Mainoo will be 100%, and then it's either your Casemiro or Ugarte.
It's Ugarte, who's
played under him before, yeah. So they have that relationship. So a few of the players are licking their lips, but I'm very excited. As soon as I heard Ten Hag was leaving, that was the first name that came to mind. I mean, if Southgate's the alternative, then Jesus.
Ah, that would have been so exciting.
I would have really enjoyed it.
Yeah, from a media perspective, yes. Yeah, a little bit salacious.
And also just for a non-Manchester United fan perspective.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Delicious. Let's move on. Spurs Villa is next. So Villa nearly friendless. Kathleen, you've gone for a Villa win. Mick, I think, has gone... No, Mick's gone Spurs as well. Nathan's gone for Villa win. Both 2-1. Everybody else is saying a draw or Spurs. So John's gone for a Spurs win. Homer. Mick has gone for a reverse jinx Spurs win. I have done exactly the same thing. Did I? No, I did. I went for a draw in the end. Sorry. Okay, 1-1.
You sound like you have regrets.
Everybody else gone to, well, they absolutely hammered Villa the last time they played, and that is fresh in my mind. And that
4-0
was
it? Last?
And that was the end of the season from Villa's perspective. Spurs are going to slalom their way to the last Champions League place. We were all watching the European coefficients as the Germans slashed their way through Europe. And it didn't end well for the English clubs in getting their fifth spot. But then Spurs fell off a cliff. And, didn't make any sense. So that is definitely, like, they were, was it 3-0 after 15, 20 minutes? Villa played okay for the first 5 minutes, a couple of chances, and then every time Spurs got a chance, they scored, and they ran Villa ragged, and Villa looked like a shambles. Mm. And I actually think it had a fairly interesting impact. I'd love to see Villa's average position, the depth that they're defending at now, because they're nowhere near the same high line that they had last year, even though everybody still talks about their high line. This time last year, they were the most... they had the team who had the most offsides against them in the top five leagues. Now Barcelona are miles ahead of everybody else. So Emery has obviously changed his defensive structure, and I think it's kind of off the basis of that. So we'll see.
That game wasn't an anomaly though, wasn't it? In terms of like the history between the two sides. Like Villa generally have a decent record against Spurs. Like they're generally quite close whenever they go up against each other. It's a very different stage of the season. As you said, they've had that shock to the system already. I don't know. I think it'll be a fairly close game, but I would be severely surprised if it was another hammering like that.
And Villa won 2-1 in North London in this fixture last season as well. We can't forget, although you almost treat the 4-0 as a bit of an anomaly. Villa look better now than they did, certainly at that particular juncture. And like away from home this season, I went for 2-2, but... Like there is unlike the hunch for the last game, there's a little bit of logic behind my 2-2 this time. Like away from home this season, they've been really good, Villa. I think it's in the 6 games in all competitions. They've won 5, drawn 1, but in each of them, they've scored twice. So I'd expect Villa to get a couple of goals, but then again, you'd also expect Tottenham at home to be quite dangerous, and that's why I've gone for the 2-2. I watched Spurs during the week in the Carabao against Man City, and really exciting. Like Pep Guardiola, obviously, naturally, pointed out the injury crisis that Man City are having at the moment, and that's a fair enough excuse. And Haaland, he left on the bench. But still, Spurs look really good. So dangerous as they usually are in the counter-attack. Kulusevski was brilliant. Timo Werner scored a goal, which should be headline news all around the world, I think. I'd expect a pretty good game, actually, in this one. We'll have live commentary this one, by the way, on Sunday on Off the Ball, 2 o'clock kickoff, and then United-Chelsea is the second game. So I don't want to curse it, but I think there'll be goals, and it's hard to separate them, so I've gone for a 2-2.
It should be a really good game. Both sides really like to play good quality football, and most of their best players are coming into some kind of form at the moment. Leon Bailey for Villa has started to play relatively well compared to how badly he'd started. He's still not perfect. Obviously, John Duran is the greatest striker in world football at the moment.
True.
And both sides were beaten by Crystal Palace in the last 7 days. I don't know if there's any time in recent history that you could say this about a game.
I almost feel that Evan Nielsen equaliser for Bournemouth against Villa as well, although Villa fans will hurt for it, I think it could be the best thing to happen Villa this season. Like, it could be that kick up the ass. Any sign of complacency goes when you concede, what, 96, 97th minute equaliser like that? I know it's hard to take, but it can work out in your benefit in the long term.
I think those 2 points dropped could well be the difference between 5th and 6th at the end of the year, you know. So look, it's very early on, but Villa being able to scrape through after a big European game where they were clearly the better side. Mark Travers had a game for the ages and then to concede in the heartbreaking fashion and then to lose midweek afterwards, you're like, oh, okay. But they had a team of all their injuries back midweek, so I think it'll be a different, stronger, much stronger team that takes the field at Tottenham on Saturday and Sunday. Anything else to say about this? No.
Goals galore.
All right, let's move on. Next one.
Okay.
Liverpool versus Brighton. So Liverpool obviously played Brighton midweek and beat them 3-2. And everybody says it's going to be exactly the same result, as in a Liverpool victory, with only Mick and Nathan thinking that Brighton won't score. Shane, you also say Brighton won't score. 1-0, 2-0, 3-0 are the scores. Almost nobody's agreeing on scores here. There's a few 2-1s, a few 3-1s. I actually really think Brighton are a very good side. I think they've got genuine strength and depth, although several of the players are still very young. I like their manager. I like the style of football.
Mm. Have we not been saying that about Brighton for a couple of seasons now, though? And it hasn't really...
Well, they nearly qualified for the Champions League 2 years ago. I'd say that's about as...
I know, but as in, would you not expect them to have kicked on a bit more since then? I feel like every season we go in and we think that this is going to be the season that we see that spark come alive for them. And
I think the fallout with De Zerbi had it was coming for a while, it happened, and there was a hangover from it. And I think now that they have a manager who I think will be there for a couple of seasons, this is a Premier League, that's kind of a stupid thing to say, most people last 18 months, either for good or bad, but they're incredibly well run, as we know, in terms of profitability, their ability to scout. Look, all that's in the positive side. Will they actually beat Liverpool this weekend? I did not predict that. I'm not predicting that. I'm not even predicting they're going to get a draw. I think Liverpool's need for points is too great. But I really like Brighton.
Yeah, I know I've gone for 2-0, but like, Brighton games have a lot of goals in them. I think it's an average of 4 per game. I just think you look at moments like last weekend when Brighton go 2-0 up and Evan Ferguson scores that goal against Wolves and they're 2-0 up with, what, 4 or 5 minutes left plus stoppage. It was just a horrible way to then drop points. And after a game like that, you want a relatively easy fixture to get some points on the board, to reignite the team, to forget about the previous week, and to have Liverpool away as the game after that is horrible, really. I know it's that weird one where you play twice in a week, like Chelsea and Newcastle in the Carabao in the league. It's a strange one, but obviously there's changes made in the Carabao Cup, and only for Jarrell Kwanzaa having an absolute nightmare the other night, that game maybe could have been different. I just think Liverpool, they look so structured under Arne Slot. That's really, really difficult to break down. Herzler will be one of the managers who will absolutely relish that prospect of trying to figure it out.
Calling them boring, is that what you're saying? dull to watch, shit on a stick.
I think United fans would take that any day of the week if they were getting results Liverpool are getting, to be fair. Certainly not boring. Like, I just think since that Forest defeat for Liverpool, they've copped on. It, almost like the Evan Nielsen argument I had that you know, they needed that little glitch in the matrix to kickstart their season. Liverpool possibly needed that Forest shit show to really kickstart things for them. And, you know, since they've had the 4-game winning streak since, and that could have been the moment which kickstarted them. And I don't see them faltering. I don't see them dropping points in this one. Even if it was in Brighton, I don't think they'd be dropping points. So 2-0 is fairly safe, I think, for me.
How good are Liverpool going to be, do you think?
I think exactly what Shane has said there, that Slot has come in and rejuvenation feels like the wrong word because they are so structured, and it's not, if you're watching them, it's not like you're getting particularly excited and being like, wow, this is a really cool new brand of football, but...
Just like watching Arsenal.
But it does the job. Well, kind of does the job for Arsenal this season, but... And I think that, if anything, Arsenal and City are undergoing a bit of a... Let's say like a crisis in character almost as to what what they are for this season and what sort of team they're going to be. And I mean, with City, I would have a lot more faith in them turning it around in the next couple of months than I would have Arsenal. But you don't really have that with Liverpool. I feel like there's a certainty and a calmness to them this season that they may look at challenging in a way that they haven't been able to the last few seasons if they can stay relatively injury-free and don't go through what they did last season.
Winning games like this in a routine fashion, that's kind of a prerequisite for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and so you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think I said 3-1.
By the way, Liverpool have a seriously tough, like some people have been throwing this argument at them, that they have a seriously tough fixture list coming up, that, you know, maybe they've had it fairly simple. I'm just looking at the fixture. So after Brighton, in the next number of weeks, including the Champions League in this, but after that, they have Leverkusen at home, they have Villa at home, the following game just before the international break, in Southampton away, fair enough, home to Real Madrid in the Champions League, then home to City, then away to Newcastle, then the Merseyside derby. Like, it's tougher on a fixtures for Liverpool over there. So I'm not saying they're going to be found out, but I'm saying, you know, the next month is going to tell you exactly where Arne Slot has taken this team in a short space of time.
Or they win all those games and everyone's like, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the opportunity for them, because I don't think they're going to be scared of any of those. Away to Newcastle, yeah, okay, no problems. Mm. The Merseyside derby, any day of the week. Real Madrid, flaky, could go either way. Like, they've just been hammered. There's a template there for you. Obviously, they can rip you apart, but I don't think they've fully worked out exactly how to play just yet as a team with their glittering array of attacking stars.
City at home this day next month, the 1st of December. Yeah. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah, that is a very, very big. So that's the 1st of December.
1st of December.
Sunday, the 1st of December, yeah. The day after the election. Mm-hmm. Right. Our final fixture this week is United against Arsenal in the WSL. Manchester United are friendless. Does that make any sense, Kathleen?
Off the basis of how Arsenal have played so far this season, not really. Like, obviously, they got rid of Adovel before the international break that we just had, and that was a big move for them. They still haven't appointed a new manager. I think a lot of Arsenal fans would have expected that to come at some stage over the last 2 weeks.
What's going on?
Like, to be honest, they've been very closed doors about it. There hasn't really been any leaks. There hasn't been any, these are the potential people that they're looking at. I mean, I think a lot of Arsenal fans, after the Chelsea result and just the general run of form that they had, were hoping that someone like Casey Stoney might come into the role. She, for one reason or another, was a bit of irony in the whole thing, was at the Chelsea game as a guest of Arsenal, which ended up being, you know, Adewale's last game. So everyone was a bit like, did they know this was coming?
And
they're
timing,
treating her very well.
If they did know it was coming, they would have appointed her by now, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you never know. They could. I know some other people were saying that Jonathan Giraldez, who's over in the States, who coached Barcelona to the Champions League and all their league success in general, that was another name that was being thrown around, but he just got a new extension over in the States. So I say that was unlikely enough. I think with United this season, we're starting to see them grind into an actual side a little bit more than they have been. They've been very up and down, but they had some good results before the international break. Arsenal had some very bad results, and then a bit like rude, United had that, you know, interim manager assistant stepping up, bit of a bounce, got a good result. So they'll be coming into it confident, I would say, because on paper, Arsenal should absolutely be defeating this United team. But I'd be unsure of what sort of certainty there is around the club at the moment, considering the fact there hasn't been a manager appointed yet. And also everyone's been away on international break for the last 2 weeks. No major injuries, though, which is probably the main thing for both sides. Leo Williamson back in the squad after scoring for England during the break as well.
I kind of regret my decision looking at it there. I've gone for 1-1. I probably went for the new manager bounce without the manager kind of thing.
I totally wouldn't be surprised if it was like a 1-1 draw. Like that, I feel that's the stage that this Arsenal team are at the moment. I'm just optimistic that Adeval was bad for their mentality. There was a bad attitude around the place, and a bit like you were saying, the vibes, they're back.
Yeah, the vibes, go for the vibe. I almost regret not going for United win now in that one. Grace Clinton has been brilliant. Like,
yeah, she has.
In fairness, the home form for United looks fairly structured and solid, and they're getting good results. whether that can they can continue that, who knows? But it's also the Formula One thing. I should have gone with if Verstappen chooses the hard tires, Hamilton goes with the soft. Everyone has gone for draw for Arsenal, so I do kind of regret not going for the difference.
This is how you make up a bit of distance in who you got.
It's unfortunate. Yeah. So
United holding on to Grace Clinton and not letting her stay at Spurs is the reason that their season has gone so well so far.
Yeah.
Just to open the kimono a little bit here, but what's actually supposed to happen is everybody are supposed to blindly predict what's going to happen, but several people wait until the last second and then try and zag while everybody else zigs, most notably Nathan, who is always the last one in, who happens to be top of the table at the moment. So is it actually his superior football knowledge, or he's just playing the odds?
There was also Owen putting in his picks, which were basically exactly the same as Cullum's, that
like seconds later. That was interesting. Yeah, there was a little bit of there was controversy.
Shots fired.
Yeah, Microsoft Teams nearly blew up yesterday with this whole thing.
What was the only difference? So they both said 2-2 in United Chelsea, 2-2 in Spurs Villa, 3-1 in Liverpool Brighton, and then the only difference was United Arsenal. Cullum said 2-1 and Owen said 2-0.
I have to change that just in case.
Just a little.
I'm going to copy everything except, it's clearly not copied because I've got a full stop there instead of a comma.
Yeah.
Essentially. 2-2 is the result you go for when you haven't a clue what's going to happen. We should have done that last week with the Arsenal game. We didn't, and therefore we had no winning bet. We hope that has changed for our charity this week. Well, that is this week's episode of Who You Got. Thanks for listening.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.